Hi, everyone. My name is Bruce McConnell. I'm the Global Vice President at the East-West Institute and Director of our Global Cyberspace Cooperation Program. Welcome to the EWI podcast. Today, I'm here with Udo Helmbrecht, who is the Director of the European Union's Cybersecurity Agency. Welcome, Udo.
Welcome, Bruce. Thank you for this podcast.
Thank you so much for being with us today. So the ENISA, the European Cybersecurity Agency, has just gotten a big boost of responsibility in Europe with a new law that has it in the position of really making a difference in the overall cybersecurity of the members of the EU. Can you tell us a little bit about that change and what you're doing about it?
Yes, of course. We have it still in the parliamentarian process, so it will take a couple of months until it comes into force, but we are on a good way. So there's basically two parts, which is giving ENISA more responsibility in operational areas. So if you think about it, supporting smaller member states, governments, member states agencies. Another important part is a cybersecurity certification, where we want to have in Europe a step into a harmonized cybersecurity certification scheme.
So you will be in a better position to help the smaller states, but you also will have the ability to raise the level of cybersecurity across Europe by having a harmonized regime.
Yes, so if you look today, just remember this Mira botnet attack, a WannaCry attack. So the question is, what happens there to industry, to hospitals, to consumers? So the idea is with this regulation that we have more certified products, more IT security. You can take examples, let's say, from a smartwatch, a mobile phone, a router. You can take a car, a manufacturing production line, until encryption on a governmental level. So the whole range is something where the intention is to get a better product security and safety by certification.
Of course, certification is a big challenge in this industry because it's a very moving target, right? Products change a lot. And so I wonder, one of the questions that you are surely facing, and I wonder how you're thinking about it, is to what extent does it make sense to look at the processes that companies are using to build the products or services, as opposed to the product itself, which may be changing very quickly?
If you look into this legislation, it will be very generic and will give us a lot of opportunity together with the associations, the industry and standardization bodies. So to name a few examples, is if you look into it, it's something where we talk about processes, products and services. So this means you can look into a cloud service where you can get a certification. We have today voluntary certification in this area. If you look into products, it can be something like I mentioned, a smartphone, a device, a smart home infrastructure. So and this gives them a lot of, let's say, possibilities to say, where do we start, where's the risk, and where's the most benefit for industry and consumers?
Yeah, so you put your finger right on it, of course. The purpose of this is not to write a bunch of regulations. The purpose of this is to reduce risk. And so by that, you have to think about where is the largest benefit, both from the what bad consequences could happen with insecure products.
Yeah, I think if you look into examples in other sectors, you have cars or planes. And if you look into this, you have a supply chain, you have quality. If you have a car, you make crash tests.
Yeah.
And I think if you take these pictures, we also want to have crash tests for hardware and software products.
Yeah? Right, right, that's right. And you can't always, with a plane or a car, you can't always just reboot it. You have to replace it.
But this is something where we're also thinking about, because the so-called common criteria certification is a heavy process we have today in high security areas. And the challenge is, if you look into our product, it's patching. Yeah? But just look in a, let's say, smart home device into a camera or locker. The challenge is to buy it. Do you have a guarantee that it's patched? Do you have a guarantee that it's, let's say, by default secure, that you have default passwords? So I think if you look into our home, there are some trivial things. If you're an IT expert, you know what to do.
Yeah.
But if you're a normal consumer, you need some help, some checklist that you can say, okay, if I buy this product, it has a label, and I can be sure certain baseline protections are implemented.
That's right, yeah. So as you say, for your refrigerator or other device that's connected to your network, the same network that your personal computer is connected to that has your personal data, you want to know, does it transmit its transmissions in the clear, or are they encrypted? Can it be patched in the first place? And does it have something other than admin as the password?
Yes, exactly. That is, so I think, and if you go into the industry, it's something where you have now, let's say, possibilities. Look, we talk about the future, about autonomous driving, we talk about artificial intelligence, robotics. So the question is now, if you have a, let's say, classical production plant, let's say in the automotive sector, and if you have now a lot of IT sensors, devices in the plant to control the process, or if you have a car with a lot of sensors, then it's an issue to get this secure. And if you then have some kind of certified product in the supply chain, where you build the pieces together, we expect that we get more security.
That's right. Yeah. So as you mentioned before, the common criteria, which was developed originally by the U.S. National Security Agency, was kind of the first method of certifying products and evaluating them. But as you say, also, it's become very, very cumbersome. It's very slow. By the time you finish that process, the product is already out of date. So how do you think about that? How do you make a light process that works well with the quick changes of technology?
As I think you mentioned it, it started common criteria beginning of the 90s. And what we also should not forget, it had two aspects. Yeah, one is what's protectionism. Mm-hmm. If you go back this, let's say, nearly 30 years, it's something where it was the Western states who did it. Yeah. US, Canada, Germany, France, UK, Australia. Yeah. So it was a certain time, a certain spirit, and it was for high security products.
True, true.
So when you look later in the 0 years, we did it for identity cards, for passports, where you say you have a passport, it's valid in Germany for 10 years. So this means you don't patch a passport, yeah?
Right.
So this means it is another approach for which products you did it. And you are completely right today. If you have something, let's say, like a car, or when you have, let's say, over-the-air updates, when you need, let's say, something where the features are extended, or when you find a bug and you have to patch it, then in other processes. So if you look what happened in the certification situation, that in some European member states, the states itself started with special national certification.
Right.
So if you take Europe, you have Germany, France, and UK, three different schemes for smart meter certification. So
for the smart electric grid.
Yes, yeah. So you have in your household, let's say if you have water, electricity, you have a meter, and this is what we call smart meter.
Right.
It's something where you have different certificates. So this means that what we want to achieve is that you have a common scheme that can be used in global competition. Everyone can then produce a product against this certification scheme. And the other thing is that we are really thinking about, let's say, lightweighted certification up to this high end. Yeah.
Right.
Just give you a simple example. If you have today a fitness tracker, then you want to be sure what personal data is there transmitted and do I have it under control?
Right.
Is it only transmitted to my doctor or does it, who else? Does it my, let's say, friends see?
Yeah.
Who shall it
see? Or your insurance company.
Yeah, and then it becomes dangerous when you get another low or high rate because of your health condition. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So I think to look into this, we are discussing more flexible schemes from the lesson learned from the past. Yeah,
no, that's right. Yeah, well, it's a very dynamic environment. Yeah. So in many areas, it seems to me, for example, in the area of data protection or personal data protection, you know, we do have the what they call in the US the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, which is a scheme that everyone in the world is really paying attention to. I mean, if you look at the data protection regimes that are now being advanced by the Chinese and the Indians, they're following along the lines of the GDPR in many ways. So in some ways, the Europeans have taken the forefront in terms of securing personal data, and I think this may be an opportunity for more European leadership in this area.
Yeah, I think if you look into it, I think there are two essential points with this GDPR.
Mm-hmm.
One is we talk for decades for privacy by design.
Yeah.
And I think it's always a philosophical discussion, where do you need self-regulation, voluntary industry behavior? So, and then, of course, I can mention now Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook at the Congress. So you see there's a discussion. I think this discussion shows that at one point in time, governments think or see it doesn't work, you have to do something. Yeah?
Right, right.
So and this is at the GDPR, what I expect will give more privacy by design products. Yeah,
yeah. No, in fact, the question on the table for Facebook is, can it provide European level privacy protection for all of its customers? And that will be a benefit for everyone.
Yes, I want to take the chance also to emphasize something. If you look from the GDPR perspective, it puts us as a user under control. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this means it's something that
it's my data,
I can
say what happens to it.
And this is something I have the opportunity to say, okay, if there's a company, a social network or whatever, And if I think I get a benefit, then I tick the box and say, you can use and sell my data. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I want to know where they sell it to. Yeah. And if I'm then, let's say, 20 years older, I might say, oh, now I have another family situation, or maybe I have another philosophy background then, and say, oh, now I want to change it, then I want to take it back. What is also today, let's say, you have a health insurance as an insurance company,
yeah,
and they have all your data.
Yeah.
And you say, ah, there's another insurance company who gives me another premium rate. Yeah. They want to be able to take my data, my healthcare data, from one insurance company where they have all the bills or this, to the other insurance company. Yeah?
Yeah.
So this means this is the point. And I think if we do this, it is something where it's about me, where I say, I don't like my data to be shared, or I say, I give it to you, and what you do with it, I know that you sell it, but I want to have a benefit.
Yeah.
And I think this is the important picture, that it gives the opportunity to us.
I think it's very good. It really shifts the power balance, if you will, between the company and the individual.
I think it enforces transparency, because I think today, I think all of us who are, let's say, using this social networks or using, let's say, online shopping, you are sometimes surprised. You are searching for something and said, you should buy this product.
Right.
Or this company sends you some advertising and you say, how the hell do they know that I like this shampoo or this cigarette or whatever? Yeah.
Exactly.
And this is something where at least it should be transparent what they do with my data. Yeah?
Right. And it's based on your consent in a meaningful way. Well, what do you think of the RSA conference so far? Are you having a enjoyable time? We had a good conversation a few minutes ago at the German Pavilion.
Yes, I think it's always a great opportunity. I was just thinking, it's now, I think, 15 years that I was the first time at the RSA conference.
Wow,
So, and I think if you look, it's a great city. If you come to San Francisco, you have a chance. I think it's two things. One is it's great for networking, because it's something where you meet and you just can say, okay, we meet here and everyone is here. You can have this networking. The other thing, it's really something where you see how it changes. Yeah. So if you look, let's say, 15 years back, you didn't have tablets, you didn't have this social networks in this way determining this. We didn't have this podcast.
And we didn't have 45,000 attendees. We had maybe 5,000. So.
And I think it's great if you also go, and this is every year, I think, exciting for me, if you go through this exhibition area, you see still the big companies.
Yeah.
Sometimes someone disappears. But what is really amazing for me is that you have this small booth with really engaged people who have an idea.
Right.
And of course, some of them are never there in the next year, but some of them are unicorn in a couple of years.
That's
and this
true.
Is something if you see and say, ah, I met this guy 5 years ago and now they make good business, it's great to see it here.
It is. It's great to see that. Well, thanks very much for being on our podcast today. It's really great. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
Yes, same to me, and have still a nice time here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.